You're listening to the FQXI podcast. You know, it's always astonishing to me how theoretical physicists like Hossenfelder are able to use maths to make accurate predictions to test models. In the case of gravitational waves, Einstein posited their existence 100 years ago, and it's taken us a century to catch up and be able to detect them. It shows you how well mathematics describes reality.
Which is our not-so-subtle segue into a plug for FQXI's latest book, Trick or Truth, The Mysterious Connection Between Physics and Mathematics, published by Springer, which is now available to buy or download with links on the podcast page. The volume brings together the winning essays from our last essay contest, which asked why such a connection should exist, or indeed if it is mysterious at all. Our winners are often extremely inventive, and in this compilation, as in the past, we have some works inspired by fiction and written as short stories. That's something that may please our next guest, London-based author Liam Hogan.
It may very well do. Hogan, who has a background in physics and has published numerous stories across a range of genres, recently won a physics fiction contest run by our friends at the Centre for Quantum Technologies in Singapore for his spooky story, Anna, about a young girl who is haunted by thoughts of the multiverse. We'll be listening to Hogan read out his story in a moment in a recording he made for Wandsworth Radio's Blackshaw Arts Hour, which they are kindly letting us use. But before we get to that, I met up with Hogan at a slightly noisy cafe in London and asked him more about his physics background, how it helps with his writing, and what inspires him. So first of all, congratulations. You just won a really nice prize run by the Centre for Quantum Technologies in Singapore for a short story that you wrote that will interest our listeners quite a bit because it's about quantum physics. And, well, I won't say any more about it just yet, but let me first off just sort of ask you about your interest in physics.
Okay, well, I did a degree in physics at Oxford University too many years ago now. And although the job I went to do after that was very much not physics, it was more to do with computing, I've always kept an interest in physics, and I still do. I go to as many events as I can which have a scientific background.
Was writing something that you'd always been interested in and, you know, been doing from a young age?
Yes, it is. It's something I kept on dabbling at in various points. I think I won my first prize about the age of 11 in the local newspaper. It wasn't a very sciencey-based story. It was about a pixie that didn't know its left from its right. And then I kept on dabbling, but never very focused, until I went to America. What I was doing was IT for finance, which is very boring, not very bohemian. Because I was living there for a while and had to do something with my evenings, I joined a creative writing course. So yeah, I enjoyed it there, and the creative writing course, which is Gotham Writers, was mainly focused on short fiction, and it just covered the various ways of, you know, telling things from different points of view and, you know, the shapes of kind of stories. But mainly it was encouragement, because although I'd written quite a lot of dabbled stuff, not many people had seen it. It'd always been kind of kept slightly hidden. Whereas this course, you had to review other people's work, and they reviewed your work, and you got feedback, and then you tried to improve it. That was kind of key. It was the idea that other people would come back, and they would like what I've written, which hadn't kind of happened or had a chance to happen before.
So let's turn to your sort of your winning story, and we'll try not to put in too many spoilers just yet, but it deals with parallel universes, can I say that? And it's, you know, it's quantum physics, it's the Everettian multiverse, which our listeners absolutely love. But it's also kind of got a sort of a scary side to it. So how did you come up with that? Was this something that originated with the contest at CQT, or was it something you were thinking about already?
It does have some seeds before the CQT competition. I think it was originally started for a theme of under the bed, which will make sense when you hear the story or read the story. And I think it was one of those things where I had a few kernels of the idea and I'd written quite a lot of it. And then the competition came along and I went, okay, well, I have to finish it and send it in for that competition as well. But it's one of those stories I love, because quite often I have the idea for a story, but I don't know how to end it. I'm much more ideas writing than character writing. I don't really care about my characters too much. They often die, and that's okay. But when I've got an idea, then it's a question of, can the story put that idea out there, and can the story still complete? And quite a lot of short stories that I read, they don't have an ending. So I always like a story that has a proper ending, and this one, because of the nature of how it goes, does have that proper ending, which is why it's one of my favourite little stories.
And so, you know, as a writer and as an author, who do you like to read, and what do you like to read? What sort of genres, which authors?
I grew up on the classic short fiction, science fiction writers, Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, lots of people like that. I've read a lot of the old classics, Heinlein, E. Doc Smith, all sorts of weird stuff out there. And a lot of the ideas on things like multiverses, I probably was exposed to them a lot more through science fiction writers than I have ever been through actual science. But that's okay, because we like science fiction for that reason. It exposes ideas and it takes them and does something interesting with them.
So you've kind of partly answered this already, but do you think that having a science background helps you as, you know, if you're writing science fiction, or could just, you know, anybody do it if they've got the imagination and the interest?
I think anybody who has an interest in science has enough, because as I say, I mean, I was exposed to multiverses a lot more through science fiction than I was through trying to do any calculations or equations or anything strange like that. And that was one of the questions that CQT kind of asked in their post-interview was, you know, did you have to do any research? I was kind of going, no. I should possibly have done some research in how psychology and child psychology works, but I didn't do that either. If you're doing real science rather than, you know, fast and light travel and time travel, all of which I've done as well, then, you know, you have to be a bit more careful, because you can easily break rules and you can come up with unrealistic scenarios. But if you're only doing what I tend to do, which is small tweaks to the universe, so a little change rather than hard science fiction where they're reinventing the whole society with a completely new set of technology, if you're only doing small changes, I think it's a lot easier to get away with, and you need a lot less solid science to do.
Okay, well, thank you so much for chatting to me today, and I hope the listeners enjoy listening to the recording that you made with the Blackshaw Arts Hour.
Great talking to you. Thank you.
The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Hello, this story is called Anna. It's weird, the things that can mess up a kid's head. Take Anna, for example. She was convinced that every time she looked under her bed, the universe split in two. In a parallel world in which a mirror Anna also looked under her bed before going to sleep and after saying her prayers, and where, up until then, she'd never found anything bad, this time there would be a ghastly demon with wicked teeth and blood-stained claws whose only desire was to catch and tear apart Anna, aged 6 3/4 years. Little wonder she said her prayers before she looked. Little wonder she had nightmares. I told her that wasn't the way the multiverse theory worked. That for every Anna that found a slavering beast, there was one that found a toy she'd lost, or one that forgot to look under the bed. She skewered me with her most outraged look. This Anna never forgot. But it's hard arguing theoretical physics with a child yet to turn 7. And as I wasn't prepared to deny the theory outright, it was clear this notion was not going to be an easy one to shift. It wasn't simply that she had a binary yes versus no, either or view, the coin toss that happened in her imagination, every time she lifted the skirt that kept the under the bed out of sight. It was because what terrified her wasn't the finding a monster under the bed. It was the not finding a monster under the bed. In her head, every time she survived, she doomed the parallel universe, Anna, to a grisly death. It was the guilt that was crushing her. "Why don't you not look?" I reasoned. "I have to," she replied with an air of ancient sorrow. "There might be a monster under the bed. I have to check. And even if I don't, the other Anna will." This had me scratching my head, figuratively speaking. I'm a psychiatrist by trade, not a physicist. Wouldn't that require the universe to have already split? And once the other Anna looked, it would be her universe that split again, not this Anna's. Maybe this was something I could use. "Anna," I said, "who looks first, you or the other Anna?" She suspected a trick and trod carefully. "We both..." And then she corrected herself. "There is no other Anna. Not until I look. Or there is, but it's me, and we haven't split yet." "If she is you, will she react to finding the monster the same way you would?" She sucked air through the gap in her front teeth. "I guess." "And how would you react if, when you looked under the bed, you found a monster there? What would you do?"
I
waited. The silence stretched between us. This was somewhere she hadn't been before.
"I don't know."
"But you'd do something. You wouldn't just sit there."
"No,"
she agreed.
I'd run, hide, scream, maybe."
"I'm sure you would. And what would your parents do if they heard you scream?"
"They'd come running."
"And they would. Any parent would." I let her think about this for a moment. "Anna, you're intelligent, resourceful, and brave. And the other Anna, she is exactly the same. She is, after all, you. She, you, would not take it lying down. Don't think I haven't noticed the hobby horse propped up against the toy chest, ready for action. And the roller skates on the landing." I wasn't sure how the roller skates would help. Perhaps she hoped the monster would trip up on them. She'd be upset if I told her their mother worthily tidied them up each night. "And the skates," I diplomatically agreed. "It's not much, perhaps, but you're doing the best you can. And so would the other Anna. No monster is going to get a free lunch in this house." She laughed, a lovely little laugh, made all the more charming by the rarity of its use. I pushed on. "So it's not a foregone conclusion that the monster always wins. And if it does not..."
"Then there are two Annas,"
she interrupted. This wasn't quite where I'd been going. I wanted her to acknowledge that she wasn't responsible for what happened in the other universes. How could she be? But sometimes, usually in fact, you have to let your patient find their own path.
"And then four, and then eight, and then..."
She babbled on. A small chime rang out. "Okay, Anna, I think we've made good progress. We'll leave it there for today." There was a muffled voice at the door. "Anna, honey, who are you talking to in there?" Anna called back.
"No one, Mummy."
Which was an illuminating denial. I jotted it down on my pad for future discussion, curious to see if Anna's mother would come into the bedroom.
Okay, sweetie,
she caved in, as I suspected she would. But go to sleep now. You hear? Anna waited until her footsteps faded away down the hallway. Good night, Doctor. Good night, Anna, I replied. Sleep tight. And then I slid myself back under her bed, listening to her breathing softly slow, and waiting for tomorrow night, when she would once again lift the covers and, all being well, discover me lying there, ready for our next session.
Scary stuff. That was Liam Hogan reading out his story, Anna, as part of the Blackshaw Arts Hour. We are linking to their site and to Hogan's award-winning story on the podcast page, fqxi.org/community/podcast.
We're also linking to the Center for Quantum Technologies contest page, where you can read some of the other winning entries. You know, I loved Hogan's story because I really sympathize with Anna. I also worry about the fate of my other selves in alternate universes.
I envy my other selves. Just imagine not being tied to this podcast month after month.
Cheer up, Brendan. In the next edition, we'll be celebrating FQXI's 10th birthday.
I feel so old. Double digits.
Oh, there's no pleasing some people. And that's all we have time for in this edition, so thank you again to Alessandro Buonanno, Ted Jacobson, Sabina Hossenfelder, Colin Stewart, and Liam Hogan. You can contact us, as always, at podcast@fqxi.org or on Twitter @FQXI.
She's been Zia Morali.
And he's been Brendan Foster. I'm off to hurl myself from the Leaning Tower of Pisa, all in the name of science.
And I'm going to hide under the bed.